Greetings and salutations, everyone. We're trying Plan B tonight. It hopefully will sound a lot better. It includes more failure points, so it's more things that can get screwed up. But we'll see. Anyway, I am AC2GS, and this is the Limark Technical Net. And we get together every Sunday night. This has been going on for 43 years plus. So every Sunday night at 8 o'clock, we meet in front of our radios, and we chat, and we hopefully inform each other, educate each other, learn from each other, entertain each other, have a lot of fun, hopefully. So once again, I thank everyone out there for showing up for it, and we'll see how it goes tonight with Plan B. Let me drop for a second, and I will give you the usual links.
Plan B works great. WS2N, good evening, Roy.
Okay, very good. I'm glad to hear that. Yeah, the audio seems to sound good. It's a little bit weird because the way I'm getting in, I'm not getting the courtesy tones and other little things going on. So I have to kind of imagine them in my head. But we'll figure it out. Anyway, the links, as per usual. If you want to reach me via email, this would be either for mailbag questions, if you couldn't reach the repeater on Sunday night, and you email me the question, we talk about the question, and you can either listen to it streamed on the Internet or on an archive copy that we'll talk about very soon. Or if you want to offer yourself up to give us a short discussion on some interesting topic, or if you want to offer a puzzle, we're always looking for TechNet puzzles that are interesting, that are reasonably easy to discuss without illustrations, and that can't be Googled for an answer in 3 seconds. Or if you want me to tap Paul on the shoulder and ask him a space-related story that you saw. Of course, you can contact him directly. His email is spacenetreport@gmail.com. My email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Also, I have a link page. It's full of all kinds of interesting articles, and we'll discuss a few of them at the top of the technical net tonight as a change of pace. But if you want to take a look at the link page, you just type into your browser roy.ac2gs.com. That'll bring you to the link page. We have a chat room available. Sometimes it's quiet, sometimes it's rowdy. If you want to get to it, you type in chat.ac2gs.com. Let me drop for a second because I have no way of knowing if I get timed out. Okay, let's continue on with the list. We offer an audio stream on the Internet of the technical net, and I leave it open the rest of the week for the Glen Oaks repeater. You type into your browser technet.ac2gs.com, and that brings you to the stream. And I always want to remind people that MyKC2NJI has an archive site called amateurradio.tv. It has archives of the Limark Technical Net going as far back as September of 2006. So please avail yourself of it. It's an intriguing source of wisdom of amateur radio operators who have moved away from the area or have become silent keys and passed on. So keep that all in mind. Let me drop for a second. I'll tell you what I got planned for you tonight. Okay. A little bit different. I have a couple of topics I want to bring up at the top of the technical net, and you'll, of course, be free to comment one way or the other, or not at all, depending upon your inclination. And then we will go to questions of a technical nature, and I will ask people to give me their first name and their call sign. And I would hope the first few people will have amateur radio-related questions, but, you know, we're open to any science and technology discussion. So hopefully that should bring us to around 10:15 tonight, and I will call upon Paul, WS2N, who will present the SpaceNet report, and that will take us to about 11 p.m., and I will return to tie a bow on it and wish you well for the following week. So if the laws of physics, the repeater, my radio, well, not my radio today, but anyway, plan B works out, we'll get it done. So let me drop for a second, and I'll give you the first of my two little early topics and see if anyone is interested. Okay. The first one is I've noticed lately there's a lot of anger and confusion on YouTube about a subject that used to be talked about a lot on this technical net when Eric was still alive. That being the ATSC 3.0 standard, apparently they're rolling it out, and it's got an interesting new feature. Apparently there is an extra new encryption technology embedded in ATSC 3.0, and a lot of people are very upset about that because a lot of the devices that are being used can't make heads or tails of the encryption. And also it's supposed to lock you out of the ability to record a transmission and do a bunch of other things that a lot of people who have television sets would like to do. So people are riled up and they're writing the FCC about it. And if you could just Google the subject on YouTube, you'll see a lot of people. I'm just curious if anyone out there is interested in the subject and probably knows more than I do. You know, if we had a Ouija board around, I would try to summon the spirit of Eric and get up-to-date information. But I know a little bit, but not that much about ATSC 3.0. Anyone with any comments? Gee, nothing at all? I don't know. I think I lost my audio. Anyone out there?
No, you heard.
You sound great. Very, very good, Roy. I just don't know what this thing is that Eric used to talk about. I missed that. I must have missed that net.
Are you talking about the broadcast, the broadcast standard?
Sound good on Echo Link. Okay, good. I just wanted to make sure. I kind of know I sound good. I was just concerned a little bit because I'm not getting any of the courtesy tones transmitted to me. So the cues are missing, and when no one actually responds with transmissions, I'm not quite sure what's going on, unfortunately. But if you remember back in the good old days, Dick would take questions, and there would invariably be this one guy who always asked really esoteric questions about DX television. And Eric, who of course was a broadcast engineer, would come on and discuss the nature of the latest and greatest digital broadcasting standard, which is ATSC 3.0. It has a punchier signal apparently for the same power. It has better range, but unfortunately, it has layers of encryption that are bothering people. So right now, according to the law, all the broadcasters have to continue to broadcast in ATSC 1.0, at least until June of 2027. And they said that come 2026, they'll rethink to extend that. But despite that, people are kind of anxious about the fact that 3.0 is seemingly breaking a lot of equipment that they like to use. And hopefully, at one point or another, they'll be updating the devices and it will be compatible with it, but they're concerned that they're going to use the encryption technology to kind of squeeze money out of a free broadcast system.
Interesting.
Yes, Wesley.
Yeah, I was confused a little for the beginning of it, but now, okay, I know everything. So, we had 480 by 7, 440 by 780. Then we had a high definition, but the high definition wasn't the high definition. There was a format 780 by 1080. And then they made a full high definition, which was... Okay, which was 1920 by 1080p. And then they went to 2K and 4K. Each time there was a need to change the TV set. So there is nothing new. So the 80SC 3.0, which is also called Next Gen TV broadcast, makes possible to pick up 4K over the air. So right now the 4K is available only for the filmmakers or fans or YouTube. And of course the old TV is not going to go for it. And it wasn't only that change that was made. There are plenty of pixel size and the pixel saturation, which is pretty much normal in every camera, but it went also to cell phones. So it's nothing new about it, and of course people don't want to change because they invested in their 52 inches or 155 inches or whatever TV sets, good for 1080p, 1920 by 1080p, which is the full high definition, but it's not good for 4K. And now they don't want to lose the money. But if you go to a Micro Center, then you ask for 4K monitor, they have a plenty of it in very much good prices. And a year ago, there was quite a different story. So it's nothing special. They can do nothing about it. And it is not done because... And it is not done because somebody wants to make money. Of course, everybody wants to make money. Manufacturing, the sales chain. So everybody's gonna make money on it because everybody's gonna pick up 4K. But now, to make it even wider, they want to have it for the over the air because not everything is New York or Chicago. There are plenty of rural places or suburbs. They have not enough money and no access to the cable. But they want to have a good quality. So, yeah, if it comes that the radio station, TV stations will change to 4K, then everybody's going to have it. As far as I remember, that was already started in 2009, the time of recession, where they defined the broadcast station cable television services, but they didn't do it yet. So there was ATC 3.0. Back to you.
Okay, the way that I'm hearing it is that no one cares one way or the other about the resolution stream, because usually these things are designed to downgrade to whatever the resolution of your imaging technology is. What's annoying these people is the encryption technology embedded in ATSC 3.0, and apparently it's making life difficult for people. Even devices that theoretically would work on ATSC device protocols are breaking when broadcasters start to turn on encryption. So there's a bunch of people. There's even supposedly, I saw on YouTube, a guy complaining that there was a company that got their device approved for ATSC 3.0, but that doesn't mean that it gets approved for the decryption protocols. So even though it has a sticker that says ATSC 3.0, it still breaks when you connect it to a broadcaster who has the encryption turned on. So It's not the resolution that's upsetting people. It seems to be the encryption protocols. People are concerned that for some kind of reason, broadcasters think that they can get money out of further encrypting their data, and it's complicating everyone's life with the devices that they already have. You know, if by 2027 they'll come up with devices that are capable of dealing with encryption, then probably it'll be moot. But right now, people are actually experiencing where they would like to use the ATSC 3.0 because it has a better range, so you can pick it up far easier than the 1.0. But because of the encryption that they've switched on recently, they can't use it. So they're falling back to the 1.0, and they're concerned that, you know, someday that 1.0 will go away. So I think it's the encryption that's their problem.
I think there is a confusion.
Well,
ATSC 3.0 supports 1080p and 4K resolution at 120 frames per second, which would be 120 hertz. So 4K has a resolution 3,840 by 2,160 pixels, which is four times the number of pixels of 1080p. ATSC 3.0 can handle the dynamic range of HDR. The HDR, well, full saturation, full color, you can play with it, whatever. Anyhow, so they can broadcast the sharper and smoother images. But for that, so you're going to have, of course, higher levels of contrast, wider range of colors. But for that, you need those extra few bits. And the confusion is probably with a format. Okay.
Well,
so
I tend to
64 and that was MPEG-H. That was advanced video codec H.264. Yeah. And then MPEG-4. So H.265 is the latest format, which actually contained the video resolution up to 7K, actually 8K UHD. So that's the problem with the new changes is. Back to you.
Well, all I can tell you is all the guys on YouTube aren't mentioning that in the slightest. There are actually features of 3.0 that they like. Once again, for some odd reason, it seems to extend the functional range. There's more error correction, apparently. So you can reach, when you have a 1.0 weak signal, it's a much stronger signal when it's 3.0. The problem that these guys on YouTube seem to be consistently suggesting is that they have a problem with turning the encryption protocols on. Not the bit resolution. They don't mind the bit resolution. They don't mind the compression algorithms. They mind the encryption. Once the encryption gets turned on, you have a bigger problem with compatible devices that will no longer work with ATSC 3.0 signals. And the broadcasters, for whatever reason, I get the idea that it's not like if you're using 3.0, you have to encrypt it. So I get the feeling that these people feel that the broadcasters are choosing whether or not to encrypt it, and that's the problem they keep on addressing, not resolution and not compression algorithms.
What I'm reading here is ATSC 3.0 uses both trap signal, which allows the receiver to discover and identify the signals that are being transmitted. The both trap signal has fixed configuration that can allow the new signal type to be used in the future, and without it, it's not going to work. And there is a heavy explanation of what it is. I'm not going to go for it, but if you go to Wikipedia ATSC 3.0, immediately on the top you have 2160p, 4K resolution, 120 frames per second, color gamut, dynamic range, Dolby AC, everything that new cameras for filmmakers have. So. It's like the Hollywood industry is gonna shrink. AI is gonna take part of the job over, and the new format for the TV is gonna be delivered. Remember, everything was analog, and they delivered digital format, and there were plenty of people who were unhappy with it. That's simply inevitable. It is gonna happen. So I don't know. Is he on anyone who has a 4K TV at home and 2XGN?
I don't think it's the 4K TV at all. Again, if you go to the link page, my link page, roy.ac2gs.com, there's a YouTube, there's a guy who's been whining and complaining about this for months. He wants everyone to sign a petition and send it to the FCC, and he keeps on talking about encryption. He does not care about the resolution. He does not care about the compression. He doesn't have any opinion that I can discern. He's concerned about the monetarily inspired encryption technology so that there's very little you can do with the broadcast signal except show it real time on your screen. You can't DVR it. You can't record it for future. You can't run it through a lot of third-party devices because, like the other copyright protective devices in the past, it doesn't get along well with them. That's what the guy is saying, and that's what a bunch of people on YouTube are saying. Not a single one is discussed at one time 4K, as far as I can discern from listening to these. So, you know, Google it on YouTube. I realize you're reading Wikipedia, but Wikipedia is just going to give you a broad picture of the ATSC 3.0 protocols, and I guess encryption is not the shiniest one, so they're not really showcasing it. But that seems to be the problem.
A VDH with a comment?
Yes, John.
Yeah, anytime you have this high-definition content, there's going to be some kind of encryption involved in it. The manufacturers don't want you or even some other commercial station grabbing their video feed and recording it or doing other things with it. The same thing exists with the HDMI standard. HDMI has built-in encryption, a high-definition content protection built into the standard. So, I mean, it was just a matter of time that all of these higher definition modes are going to have some form of encryption built into them. It's just the cost effectiveness. Go ahead.
Well, I agree with you, AC2GS. By the way, I agree with you, John. It's just that it seems like a lot of new technology doesn't really get rolled out well. Some people it gets delayed, other people it gets rolled out prematurely before there's any consumer goods or there's more than enough consumer goods that are able to deal effectively with it. So I think what's impacting people now is they have a lot of legacy equipment that's ceasing to function because primarily of the encryption protocol. I assume that, like most things, they could select a legacy layer of encryption at first and then roll out the heavy guns. I don't know the details, but I'm assuming that there's something that's doable as far as encryption technology that could belay people's complaints for the short haul.
Well, the only thing we could do is, kind of vote with your pocketbook. If enough people don't buy into it, then, you know, it will become uneconomical. But it's the same thing you see nowadays, like with TVs. You used to be able to buy a TV that had NTSC video input where you could do something with the video stream. Now every TV, the only inputs you have are HDMI, which, as I said, has the content protection on it. So they're not stupid, if you get my drift. Go ahead.
Well, I think there are televisions that have digital receivers, so you can hook them up to antennas. You know, there are separate tuners. There is HDMI. HDMI has copy protection. Everything has copy protection. It's just, I think, the kind of layers of copy protection that are being rolled out with ATS 3.0 is a little bit premature. And I'm not quite suggesting that they just run naked so that you get pristine digital copies of everything to pirate. But I'm sure that the ATSC 3.0 protocols include folded in the 1.0 encryption technology. So, again, judging from the tenacity of the people on YouTube who want people to call the FCC and demand something. You're right that ultimately the wallet decides, but then I find it a little confusing slash amusing that too many people are really concerned with ATSC 3.0. It's a broadcast protocol, and I haven't received broadcast television for at least 30 years. I went with the cable, and nowadays I stream it using my internet provider. So, you know, this is, again, not something that affects me, thankfully, but something that affects enough people that they're making a ruckus on YouTube, and I thought I would share it with you people, you know, in memory of Eric, who used to go on endlessly about ATS 3.0 because it had not been rolled out. You know, it was something that was coming in our future at that time, and now the future is now, as the old saying goes.
I think I have something that may convince you. Okay. So you were strongly trying to say that it has nothing to do with resolution. Okay. So I have a whole article that explains everything. But it says that ATC 1.0 supports only up to 30 frames per second, which is 30 hertz. And the ATC standards for Advanced Television Standards Committee, and is the that is the industry organization that sets standards, I'm reading right now, for digital television broadcast, is defined how broadcast stations and cable television service handle digital television signal since the conversion from the analog TV broadcast 2009. And they right now have a 3.0, which actually doesn't feed into the format. So it requires the new form of algorithm and new form of coding, and that's why you have that additional few bits in it. What it says, let me jump. And it's definitely because of the quality and resolution. Definitely. I can send you the article. So ATC 3.0 can handle high dynamic range HDR context, so not only can broadcast look sharper, smoother, whatever. Okay. Is the new standard called ATC 3.0 or next-gen TV? And the answer is, both ATC 3.0 and Gen Next TV are technically correct because two separate industry organizations use different names for the same thing for different reasons. So the ATC calls ATC 3.0 and frames is only the industry standard. So we're talking about unification, the group of who created that focus starting from ATC 1.0 focus on setting standards and pushing for development across manufacturers and broadcasters. So it is rather like we may say, what is the motivation of the guys who were on the top and creating it, and then the industry had to follow. So that's the only question. Other than that, is the technology. And it changed. And to exchange.
I think the problem is that we're talking about a very broad protocol, and there's a lot of different parts of it. It's sort of like if I brought up the 14th Amendment and you argued what the Second Amendment means. They're different portions of the same protocol. And the protocol that these guys are on my link page, if anyone is interested, and you type roy.ac2gs.com, it'll take you to the link page, and down someplace it says, ATSC 3.0 DRM encryption is worse than we thought. That's the title for that YouTube. So they are talking only about the DRM encryption. They are not talking about the 300 or 3,000 other aspects of the ATSC 3.0 protocol. So I think we're getting mired up in the general concept of ATSC 3.0 and not the specific problem that people are complaining about, which is the algorithm used not for the decompression, not for the resolution, not for the frame rate, but simply as a means to encrypt things against them being stolen and pirated.
I'm sending you the article that I'm reading. It's like you, Dr. Roy, you were a small kid, and now you don't fit to your clothing that you were wearing when you were five. The same is with any format that is going to be discussed now. It's just that things are becoming more complicated and more perfect, and they require the new package. And to Adrian.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say again. Okay, there seems to be a little echo on my transmissions that I'm confusing for someone else. Again, I don't know. I wouldn't say perfect. It's different, and they've widened the ability for newer technology. But once again, what it seems to be on this YouTube, again, different than the generic article of the entirety of ATSC 3.0, is that the new encryption technology is disturbing people with some legacy devices. And so my guess is they would like to have the industry delay the newer encryption technology until they could get the manufacturers of these devices to work right with the encryption technology. Otherwise, they have a lot of equipment they invested in that tends to be worthless for 3.0. That's all. Again, no resolution, no compression algorithms. We're just talking standard DRM encryption technology.
Dr. Roy, we may agree or disagree. I've learned actually that phrase from you. Thank you very much for that. Read the article. I sent you the article. Read the article and then compare. And the next week we can see who was right, who was wrong. I'm sitting deep in formats and everything that is video, and also I believe in terms of filmmaking or picture or motion picture or the photography. I'm not maybe professional, but at least somehow okay. And I believe that I have something to share. But read it, and then we can discuss it next week.
Well, I mean, the basic problem. problem is that I'm responding to the complaints of a bunch of people yelling on YouTube. And you haven't seen that, so you don't know that they're doing that. So you're just looking at it as a protocol, you know, with the differences, which is not quite the same as the specificness of these guys actually having a physical problem dealing with the newly rolled out ATSC 3.0 on devices that they already have and they're not working. And new products are being certified for ATSC 3.0, but not the DRM encryption technology. And so, at least for the foreseeable future, they see a problem. I understand you're looking at it from a professional point of view of the technical specifications. That's not what I'm discussing. I'm discussing consumers who are very upset with the rolling out of the technology and seeing the things that get broke by it. Not the new features. They're looking at the incompatibilities that are very often evidenced when new technology gets released into the wild.
VDH with a comment.
Yes, John.
Yeah, lots of times these various new standards or whatever they are, they have these hidden features that you really can't get a hold of unless you go down to the bit level to examine it. I'll give you another example. The closed captioning standard for sending closed captioning information over the TV screen, which is, I think, it's usually sent on line 21 of the retrace interval. That closed captioning standard has the ability to change the color of the closed captioning printout. It's very rarely used, but there are three bits in that closed captioning standard that will let you display any of the eight basic colors, including white and black, on the closed captioning. So it's rarely used, but as I say, unless you really dig down to the bit level of these standards, you won't be aware of these things. So just say that it is ATSC 3.0 or 3.1, that encompasses a lot. And you really have to get into the down to the bit level to really see what is available and what they can potentially do. Go ahead.
AC2GS. Well, yeah, I mean, this is a standard that collects, you know, I don't know how many hundreds of different technological changes. So, I mean, this is a big subject. Again, this is like talking about the Constitution. It's a big document, and you can focus on the first paragraph, or you could focus on the last paragraph, or anything in between. So, again, this does not affect me. I have not been concerned with broadcast television for 30-plus years. Some people used to discuss it regularly on Dick's TechnicalNet, and I'm sure there's a few people who still get broadcast television off the air. Right now, most of it is ATSC 1, but eventually all good things come to an end, and 3.0 is being rolled out, and eventually they'll shut down 1.0. Right now, the date is June of 2027. My guess is they're going to extend it, again, because of these little technical snafus that are going to be demonstrated all over the place. So I thought it was more of a bit of interesting information because of the history of this TechNet and the fact that ATSC 3.0 was discussed almost weekly by Eric. So, you know, if anyone else has any comments before we move on, please comment.
I have a question, but there's something else.
Well, I mean, we'll get to questions. I have one more subject that I would like to discuss, and then when we finish with that, we'll take questions like usual. I thought we'd mix it up. It seemed to have gone well last week, so I thought I'd see if I could, if lightning can strike twice in a row.
Well, The question is whether to discuss that or change it to the next week. I have an interesting subject explaining a lot of phenomena that are taking place. One drop of water and a spark can create the explosion comparable to TNT. So it's more energy out than energy delivered, because the chemical structure of the water is being used in that explosion to short. So since I didn't send you the material, I could put it to next week. It's also responsible for many things that happen, which is the falling electrical lines and those explosions, why they are so big, and the transformers exploding. And always happen when you have a little of water or a little of fog and to exchange.
Okay, since you didn't send it to me, it probably would be best if you send me a copy so I have a good idea what's going on, because you know, sometimes you kind of ask me to respond to these things, and without the documents, I'm not quite sure what's being discussed. Interestingly enough, this is very, very, very similar to the next topic that I'm going to present, which is basically kind of summing up the recent repeat of the fusion experiments. Remember, in December, they were able to extract more fusion energy than they used to ignite the fuel cell. They did it again in July, and they got a slightly more efficient output of energy. So that's going to be the subject coming up any minute now.
Well, yeah, it's like two examples. Yes, the common thing is two examples when we get much more energy out than energy delivered. And there is no violation of energy conservation rules, absolutely. Yes, I believe my example is many times more, much easier to make at home, but it's it's absolutely dangerous. Not many people heard about it, so that's why, Dr. Roy, you may have heard about it, but you cannot really recall it. Okay, so thank you. Until soon.
Okay, very good. Anyone, any comments before I move on to my next little presentation here?
Alpha Delta 2 Delta Uniform.
Yes, Alex.
Are all these smart TVs going to be able to update with a firmware update, or is the update to the new TV standard wire hardware needed to you?
It's my understanding that this is a really extensive improvement of the standard, so it's not as simple as downloading new firmware to a device that you bought 5 years ago. So my guess would be that you would need to buy an additional tuner, and future models will maybe even present models are capable of receiving ATSC 3.0. But old monitors with tuners built in for 1.0 will probably not be upgradable, as far as I'm aware. I said before, I don't know exactly how many people are still using broadcast television signals. I'm sure there are some. We had our own here on the TechNet for many years, and I'm sure there are other people out there. I don't think it impacts the majority of consumers, so it's not quite going to be as earth-shaking as when the NTSC standard was thrown out for ATSC 1.0, back in those days, if you were around, people were very, very annoyed, so they gave away free tuners that were able to tune old television sets for the ATSC 1.0 standard. I don't think there's going to be any giveaways now, again, because there's probably far less people affected, but there'll probably be tuners available to be purchased, and new model, Japanese and Korean and even Chinese televisions, some of them that have built-in tuners will be designed with 3.0 capability.
Did the industry favor the upgrade as like a planned obsolescence thing in that they'll sell more TVs with the new tuner tech?
I know that we're always suspicious of business and having other purposes. I think, among other things, that this improves the product. It allows for them to send higher resolution signals at higher frame rates. It also has probably better error correction. So the 1.0 signal might just be kind of fringy in your area, but if you switch to a 3.0 protocol, it'll give you a much cleaner signal. So I think I don't think they care that much one way or the other if the television manufacturers have to, make a lot of profit, because I don't think there will be a great deal of profit, because, again, I think most people who have television sets have them plugged in to the Internet or to a cable company. I don't think they have antennas. So I think the amount of people that are going to have to chuck their television for a brand-new shiny one are not going to be quite that much. I think I give the industry a break that I think they wanted these better protocols implemented that new technology allows.
I remember trying to get the free box for the first one, but I can't imagine myself carrying for the second again. I mean, YouTube TV is too good with us. And the UI seems good, so it's like a movie. All right, thank you for answering my question.
You're welcome, Alan. So we'll start the little semi presentation, and hopefully I won't time out the repeater again, because I don't get any of these courtesy tones anymore. So let me drop for a second, and then I'll be back and on with the show. Okay, there are two major methods of creating a fusion reaction here on Earth that are being investigated. One is a magnetic confinement fusion reaction. We talked about that. It's those tokamak machines. They're toroidal rings and such. The other is inertial confinement fusion reaction, which was the basis for that experiment from the U.S. National Ignition Facility back in December that was able to release more fusion energy than they used to ignite the fusion material. So for the second time, the U.S. National Ignition Facility has demonstrated that it can use less energy as the ignition force used to release the greater energy in the resultant fusion reaction. Even better, last time they used a series of 192 high-energy pulse lasers supplying 2.05 megajoules of energy. That's about a half a kilowatt hour, which unleashed 3.15 megajoules of fusion energy. This time, with a little tweaking, they were able to extract a more efficient 3.5 megajoules. Now, keep in mind that the two near-identical experiments were 7 months apart, which might suggest that any attempt to rapidly extract energy on a daily basis using this method would probably be unlikely. The fuel cell was a drop of deuterium-tritium mixture, which is much easier to initiate fusion than the hydrogen fuel used in our sun. Obtaining deuterium isn't too difficult. It exists in seawater. About one out of every 5,000 hydrogen atoms are actually deuterium atoms. Tritium is the much more difficult ingredient. A half of any quantity of tritium decays by about one half every 12.33 years. So there's no residual tritium from the very early days that our planet was formed. Instead, we need to recreate tritium from other atoms. Tritium can be produced by bombarding lithium atoms with energetic neutrons, which require a source for those energetic neutrons, which will be another complication. Let me drop for a sec. Okay, this small fuel cell is then encased in a diamond, and this diamond is encased in a gold holrum. The holrum is a little tubular object with openings in it. It absorbs all the laser energy and then re-emits it as X-rays, and these X-rays are then absorbed by the diamond covering the fuel cell, heating the deuterium tritium into a super hot plasma and creating a fusion reaction that persists for only a few millionths of a second. So, does that mean that this can be a power generator capable of generating 3 megajoules of energy? That's about 3/4 of a kilowatt hour for a few millionths of a second twice a year? Well, translating this inertial confinement fusion reaction into something a bit more constant is going to be a big hurdle. But all of this is not the biggest problem. The energy used to ignite the fusion reaction was stated as 2.05 megajoules. And the resultant energy produced from the fusion reaction was 3.15 megajoules for the first time, and 3.5 megajoules last month. But that 2.05 megajoules was not the energy used to energize the lasers. It was the laser's output energy. So how much energy was needed to pump 2.05 megajoules of laser energy, you ask? Let me drop for a sec. Okay. It took 300 megajoules. So in reality, it was 300 megajoules of energy as the actual igniter, which produced 3.5 megajoules. That means you lose 99% of your energy. So it's progress, but it certainly isn't great progress. It's not really over-unity of the ignition energy. It's the over-unity of the applied energy from the very, very lossy, inefficient pulse lasers. So much for fusion. It's not coming in 20 years at this rate. Any comments?
So the public and probably a lot of potential investors are being duped in a sense. They think this actually is close to working, the WB2BXO.
Okay, let me see if I got it. Yeah, I got it. It not really in this case, because this is a federal research lab. This is a weapons lab, so they're kind of doing this on the side and for glory points. So no one's really investing in this exact device right now. It might be causing other people to go out there and invest in other shady companies saying that they're investigating a fusion technology. But this particular, the U.S. National Ignition Factory, you can't buy stock in it. You can pay taxes, but you can't buy stock in it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I had forgotten that part. I just tuned in. I may have missed that. And, I do remember hearing, though, that the National Lab did this. But at the same time, startups are going to complain. You know, could go around and say, you see, well, we got 3.01 megajoules with 2 point something of output from the lasers, and you know, so this thing's going to work. While in fact, you know, that as you said, was output from the lasers, and not actually power input to the tubes, as we'd say at ham radio. Anyway, go ahead. I get the point.
Okay, very good. Yeah, you got to read the small print in science, unfortunately.
KT2WOT.
Yes, Chris.
Yeah, I was just listening to that. I mean, ideally, the best situation would be if the reaction could be self-sustaining. In other words, the energy released could be used to trigger the next pulse and so on.
Well, but the problem is that you don't get enough energy. You pump in, really, it's 300 megajoules of energy. You get back 3.5 megajoules. So now you got to supply another 296 and a half megajoules someplace else to let the next one go. And that was if you could just put it on a conveyor belt. These things don't go on conveyor belts. These are fickle little things. And you know, the fact that it took them about 7 months to do the experiment again would give you an indication. That entire chamber is pretty much blasted to heck. So it's not feasible as a constant energy source to begin with. And the primary reason for the experiment was to be able to say that you got more fusion energy out than you put ignition energy in. But leaving out the little gritty details that the laser pulse lasers are very inefficient. You know, only about 1% of their output of their input goes to their output. So when you factor in the inefficiency of the devices you're using to generate the pulse of intense heat, the whole thing falls apart.
Okay. By the way, your audio is excellent tonight.
Thank you. I'm using a completely different method, going around the All-Star system, which unfortunately it doesn't pass any of the courtesy tones, cues, and such. So I'm just watching sound envelopes on a program to get a feel of the courtesy tones without hearing them. But I'm glad it sounds better, because I came on earlier just to test things out, and I was told it's about 40% noise, and I like to give people a good signal. So I'm glad it sounds good today. So anyway, I thought I would present this little addition, because we talked about this 6 months ago when the initial story came out, and you know, I think the optimism in the air was it would just be a matter of a couple of years, and we'd be able to run all kinds of fun things on fusion using this technology. We are a far, far distance from that. You know, the most optimistic people with this. A study suggested that it will take about 20 years, and if you were going to ask someone back in time 40 years ago, they would have told you exactly the same thing. 40 years ago, fusion will be readily available in 20 years. It would be nice, someday perhaps, not today, not tomorrow, not next year, but I just wanted to kind of, again, demonstrate that although I'm a big fan of science, I hope you people understand it, I don't want to rain on its parade. But unfortunately, a lot of research projects get pre-announced too early and much too optimistically. So you have to keep a skeptical mind, you know, but don't just kind of reject things. Kind of get to the bottom of it and figure out if it needs to be rejected. This one needed to be rejected. You know, it was only in the tiniest of small print where it was mentioned that the lasers required 300 megajoules to pump out that 2.05 megajoules of laser energy. Any further comment, or will we? Does everyone want to move to the usual top of the technical net with questions being asked? Any other comments before we move on to the next segment?